Labasan, good afternoon. This is Kesta Disadei with us. And once again, you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. And, of course, live streaming audio anywhere in the world, real time at KTYM.com. That's at KTYM.com. Getting back to our routine, and thanks again for listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. We want to let you know that temperatures are falling in Lithuania, in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania, and tomorrow will be 65 with a low of 50, and then it's going to drop to 60. 56, 54, 59, 57, 57, 57, with lows in the mid-40s. And as a matter of fact, on Tuesday night, it'll be 36 degrees. So the global warming thing seems to be over. It's actually cooled down over here. And regular temperatures are returning to the capital of Lithuania. Last week, we also mentioned to you that we're going to try to catch up on thanking people for supporting Independent Lithuanian Radio. Jim Williams and Joanne Williams of Camarillo, California, gave a very generous donation. Jim Williams and Joanne Williams, we want to thank you a lot, and we appreciate you listening. And over the next coming weeks, we will thank the rest of you who have been consistent and contributing members to Independent Lithuanian Radio. We also want to remind you that the sale of KTYM to the Catholic Radio Network did not go through, at least for the present time, so we will continue to be on the air till at least the end of the year. So once again, the sale of KTYM to the Catholic Radio Network did not go through. And as far as we know, we will continue to broadcast till the end of the year. Now here's an interesting little story for you. Members of the youth branch, of the Homeland Union Lithuanian Christian Democratic Party turned to the state leaders and responsible officials, calling on them to take measures to make sure that some Russian performers who say they spread Moscow's propaganda are put on the list of people undesirable in Lithuania. In the context of the annexation of Crimea, we have become witnesses of Russia's artists becoming the mouthpiece and defenders of Kremlin policy. The same artists keep coming to Lithuania, and with their works that very often make allusions to pride of the Soviet Union, send a certain message that justifies that Kremlin propaganda, says Radvila Morkunaitė Mikulėnienė, the leader of the Young Conservatives. And we'll be right back. ¶¶
Paparatema.
Now, this you might find is an interesting story. If you have visited Lithuania and or Belarus, you will see that Belarus not only has this huge border, one of the longest borders bordering Lithuania, but that the coat of arms, the vitis, and that much of the history is the same. As a matter of fact, Lithuania ruled Belarus for much of its history, and there are castles and ruins in Belarus that have Lithuanian names. Anyway, there's a noticeable resurgence in Lukashenko-run Belarus to attempt to claim the history of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania for itself, according to the writer Česlovas Iškauskas. It is a country's business what monument, where and how it will be built or demolished. For instance, the Poles have built a statue of a urinating Lenin. How do you like that? The Poles have built a statue of a urinating Lenin. The Lithuanians seem not to be able to wipe out the symbols of the Soviet reality overlooking the capital from the Green Bridge. Now, if you know the Green Bridge, there's a lot of Soviet-era statues on there. And frankly, I find them kind of interesting and charming, and I'm glad they didn't tear them down. But anyway, they're there. Should we hold a referendum? The Russians may return Stalingrad's name to Volgograd, or call it Putingrad, of course, with many busts of the leaders of the nations or the current militant president. There is nothing wrong with a state perpetuating their heroes or their dictators or taking care of their history to pass on to future generations. But sometimes a theft or appropriation occurs, to say the least. Lithuanians are no exception. They have appropriated the identity of Konstantinas Kalinauskas, one of the leaders of the uprising of 1863. Now, that's only half the trouble. The current Lukashenko regime has long set its sights on the ancient Lithuanian symbols from the one-time common history. Last November, we stated that Minsk is busy revising the history of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania and embezzling its national symbols, such as the vitis, again the coat of arms, with some eventual changes to the position of the horse's tail. It would have been funny if it were not pathetic. Again, as reported by a news agency, a monument has been unveiled in Vitebsk to the Grand Duke of Lithuanian Algirdas, or as they put it, Olgird, and in Navaradusk will witness a monument to King Mindaugas. The contract has been awarded to the sculptor, who is also a molder by profession. Now, the development of Olgard's monument that lasted for 4 years could not do so without controversy. In particular, it was the Cossack community and the Russian public organizations that were raising objections and wrote letters of protest to Lukashenko. Representatives of the government were not present during the opening of the monument and did not make any speeches. On the square, Olgird, personified by an actor, read the key facts from the Duke's biography to a circle of festive-minded citizens, but he did not even mention the fact that the Duke was warring against the Grand Duchy of Moscow and twice laid siege to Moscow. After marrying Maria of Vitebsk in 1318 and through 1345, the Grand Duke of Lithuania, Algirdas, was also the Prince of Vitebsk. His brother Kęstutis then became a sub-monarch of the GDL and took care of its relations with Poland and the Teutonic Knights. During Algirdas's reign, the ethnic Lithuania went through about 100 devastating raids. That's 100 devastating raids of the Crusaders, and retaliated with 40 counter-raids against the Teutonic Order. However, Algirdas himself acted mostly in the east, expanding and strengthening the power of the GDL on the lands of present Belarus and Ukraine. Now remember, the GDL refers to the Grand Duchy of Lithuania. He continued his father's Gediminas feats and connected Smolensk and Kiev to the Grand Duchy of Lithuania in 1362. Now remember, this is a long time ago. This is before the discovery of America. In 1362, he defeated the Tatars at the Battle of Blue Waters and strengthened his influence on the Russian lands. There are three well-known Algirdas campaigns against Moscow that took place in 1368, 1370, and 1372. They were held to defend his brother-in-law, Mikhail, Prince of Tver, from Moscow and its growing power. During the first and second campaigns, which took place in late autumn and winter, he made it to Moscow. But the Kremlin withstood the attack. The third campaign, which happened in the summer, was a failure. However, in the spring of 1372, after Easter, Grand Duke Kęstutis and Duke Andrei of Poniatowsk raided the territories to the north of Moscow, and finally, a truce was called in 1372, helping retain the current state. Remember that most battles in those days were waged in the fall and winter months because it was easier in the swampy territory for horses and cavalry to cross frozen swamps. Now I remind you that Duke Andrei of Poniatowsk raided the territories to the north of Moscow, and finally, the truce was called in 1372, and it helped retain the current state. However, at that time, the ethnic Lithuanian lands constituted only a tenth of the total territory of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania, and 90% of it was extended to the east. It was a huge value to Algirdas, however, through so far as the Belarusians failed to represent him as a conqueror. On the other hand, Lithuanian rulers pursued very tolerant policies in relations to the Russian lands, contrary to what's known as the Golden Horde. They were satisfied with small contributions and military services. Basically, they collected taxes from the people. And Russian feudal lords regarded Lithuania as their state and expressed their continuing support. Thus, one might claim confidently that Algirdas saved many Russian lands from the Mongol Tartar yoke. Now, historian Thomas Baranauskas wrote, quote, if you should describe Grand Duke of Lithuania, Algirdas, this could be done in two words. He was a conqueror and a defender of these lands. Algirdas was the greatest conqueror in the entire history of Lithuania. His achievements were crucial in defending Lithuania from the Crusaders. His colleague, Alfredas Bumblauskas, stated that Algirdas' role in the eastern lands overshadows even that of Grand Duke of Lithuania, Vytautas, the descendant of the Gediminas dynasty, who took advantage of the conquest of his brother. It was Algirdas who built the Lithuanian Empire, said the renowned historian. It is believed that Algirdas is buried somewhere near Maišiagala, but this is only a speculation. In other words, our neighboring Belarusians have not any good reason to poach Lithuanian rulers. But apparently Lukashenko has a hard time now. It is difficult to refuse millions coming in from Moscow. Russians' actions in Ukraine are frightening, and the West is inevitably attractive. And so he casts around to the West, and then to the East, signs a permit to build monuments of Lithuanian dukes, then opens airports for Putin's military aircraft ever likely to fly to Kiev's Maidan, but also clasps the Maidan leaders in his arms, making bad blood with Moscow. Now, Bumblauskas goes a bit further. On the other hand, there is some risk, he says, of course, as some aspects remind us of Hitler's policies over the Sudets. It is obvious that with their imperialistic attitudes, Belarusians are convinced that Vilnius belongs to them. Last year, perhaps it was an exaggeration to maintain that by appropriating the GDL, someday Minsk will pocket Lithuania too. However, Lukashenko's rhetorical invasion is pretty obvious. Now remember that the longest common border that Lithuania has is with Belarus. Now let me remind you of one of his passages. Last year in October, when meeting President of Russia Vladimir Putin, and both were flying together in a helicopter over Kaliningrad, it is said at a press conference held for Russian journalists in Minsk that, quote, together with Putin, we were flying over Kaliningrad in a helicopter. I have noticed that you do not work your land in as you did in Soviet times. It was the best, most prosperous land, said Putin. I told Vladimir Vladimirovich, listen, give some of this land to us. You don't need to give away its ownership. We will work the land and do some agricultural business. We will make good use of the Grodno region. This is a strong region from the point of view of agriculture. They will quickly till and sow the land and even build dairy and shopping complexes in the Kaliningrad Oblast. They will produce milk and sell it to Lithuania. Now, Lukashenko supposedly discoursed the situation as if facetiously. We also should not forget Lukashenko's advocate, Vladimir Zhirinovsky, a Russian liberal Democrat who earlier in September made it clear on a television show that the Vilnius region should belong to Belarus, and the Baltic countries are to be occupied immediately because they dared to support the U.S. military strike against Bashar al-Assad's regime in Syria. If I were president, I would summon the ambassadors of Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania and would tell them, dear ambassadors, wasn't it we who gave you Klaipeda? It is, after all, the blood of our soldiers that was spilled to reclaim it from the Germans. It is Prussia. Get out of Klaipeda, he said to the Lithuanians, immediately. Surrender the Vilnius region to Lukashenko. It is Belarusian territory. So said Zhirinovsky on last year's television programs. As we can see, the actualization of common history by means of gigantic monuments is not that distant from open, though blurry, claims over neighboring lands, just as the changing attitudes towards the GDL and Great Dukes are close to ostensible friendship with the constantly reviled West, and the oath of allegiance to Putin is not that far from praises in favor of Maidan. An old adage of Virgil's is quite appropriate here. Beware of Greeks bearing gifts. We'll be right back. In case you were wondering, that's a little ethno-jazz from Sutaras, traditional Lithuanian music, sort of jazzed up. I'm going to try to rush through this next story. While Ukraine is spreading joyful news about liberating settlements during new anti-terrorist operations, the Russian plan to turn this country's divided into mutually confronting parts into the territory of chaos is collapsing, writes Romas Sadauskas Kvietkavičius. A failed state like Somalia in the middle of Europe would become a great deterrent to the European Union not to urge the countries Russia considers its sphere of influence to bind them with Eastern partnerships and associate membership agreements. The birth of the Eastern Slavic state based on European democracy and human rights is the greatest threat to Vladimir Putin's plan to recreate, quote, the Russian world of the former Soviet Union. The largest 20th century geopolitical catastrophe was not the separation of the occupied Baltic countries and former Soviet republics from Russia. Even more, not even Boris Yeltsin's era of economic reforms, still being blamed by the workers of bankrupt industrial giants that failed to adapt to the market economy. The most painful thing was to say goodbye to the Soviet greatness and exclusiveness. During World War II and the other post-war years, tens of millions of Russians starved. They felt cold. They suffered from repressions. But the propaganda of the time was able to give the meaning to those sufferings. It is enough to look at the faces of Stalin-era photographs and films. They smiled and showed their joy as they were followers of a new American Protestant church that has just discovered Jesus. Through 1991 and 1992, after the collapse of the social economy, the deprivation was significantly less. But even the faces of the new Russians who managed to become the owners of factories and banks almost overnight were not happy. We, the residents of the Baltics, survived that period by means of ideas of recreation, the recreation of national states, and then we all together went to the European Union and to NATO. We felt like a wife escaped from a violent, alcoholic, jealous spouse who discovered a new world where everyone recognized her to be an equal human being and did not try to impose any senses of guilt. Russian elites feel not too bad slamming oil dollars in Europe, sending their children to the best universities in the West and buying up football clubs and medieval castles. But it was necessary to give something to the Russian people longing openly for Soviet-era social guarantees, and certainly for tomorrow, and for a sense of historical mission. It was possible to even build a European welfare state, but it is an integral part of democracy and human rights. Even the Chinese model, combining state-regulated free markets with one-party control far more than the West, could be copied literally due to differences of Russian and Chinese mentalities. Vladimir Putin's regime offered to the Russians what they have always wanted, a sense of grandeur. That is, however, completely inadequate to the country's economic, military, and political power. The words of the U.S. President Barack Obama pronounced back in March that Russia was not a global but was only a regional power offended Putin more than the Ukrainian song that's been gaining popularity in the whole world with a chorus solely of la, la, la. The Putin regimes put the citizens on the exclusive mission of the Russian nation and vision of the, quote, Russian world in place of freedom and well-being. It is not even a bit afraid of the West. He knows that NATO will not attack Russia, but it continues playing ideological games of the Cold War since the vision needs an enemy. Muscovite political scientists note that even in the end of the 20th century, the stage manager Alexei Balabanov gave Russia a myth of an ideal national hero and national idea, the murderer Danilo within his triumph. Game over America, he says. In his opinion, the naked prostitute in Brother 2 is trustful, holy Russia that was defied as an unassimilated foreigner. The killer, Danilo, was not asking himself stupid questions, and it's also St. George chopping off with the axe the head of the old woman, the moneylender America, together prophetically, a Jew banderist who attempted the glorious Sevastopol. Finally, in the minds of many Russians, Ukrainians are still not an independent nation, but they are only a second-rate Russian dialect region. Kiev, welcoming Russian dissidents, artists deemed decadent by Moscow, and businesses that can no longer stand the corrupt regime, will make it into something like West Berlin during the Cold War. We've just about run out of time. This is Kęstutis Deividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial.
Сидора чуто Сидора чуто Вені солу чуто Сидоро чуто, гені солу чуто, чуто, чуто.